Stay warm at the Horseshoe this season. Score an exclusive, officially licensed Ohio State scarf when you subscribe to the Columbus Dispatch. Get the planet's best Buckeye coverage, award-winning reporting, and one amazingly cozy scarf by subscribing at dispatch.com/scarf. This promotion is licensed by the Ohio State University. Trademarks used with permission.
Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy podcast hosted by the Columbus Dispatch. I am Columbus Crew SC beat writer Andrew Erickson, and I'm joined by photographer Kyle Robertson. And we have a special guest joining us on the podcast today, coach and sporting director of Columbus Crew SC, Greg Berhalter. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I appreciate it. So just to do a quick recap of the last couple weeks for you guys, fairly busy transfer window for you guys. You clear $1 million in cap room for next season. What is your overall impression of what you guys were able to accomplish over these last, 6 weeks? And what's your outlook on the team moving forward for the next few weeks here?
So we had two objectives. I think the first objective was to improve our current squad. And we feel we did that with bringing in Pedro Santos from Braga. The biggest transfer sum paid in the history of the club. And we think it's going to be a good addition to the group. Very technical player, very good at combinations, able to shoot well, good at set pieces. And addressing some of the gaps we thought we had in the lineup, particularly on the right side of our attacking wing. And then the second objective was to, set us up for the future with some moves we could potentially make. We knew we had the number one allocation ranking that we wanted to capitalize on. And then we also were able to move Ethan Finley for, in my view, above market price. We thought we'd get slightly less than that, but, overall, very good deal.
And when you look at, just the number of $1 million in cap room cleared, it's a pretty jarring, pretty large number. What does that allow you guys to do just in terms of flexibility for next year and, just to have those options and kind of have that in front of you?
Well, I think when you talk about TAM and general allocation, it allows you to, go above and beyond the salary cap. So we'll be able to add players that can make an impact, and we'll be able to pay them. The international market is getting more expensive, and to bring players in isn't cheap. So we'll use these funds to bring in starter caliber players.
And just kind of changing gears a bit, when we do interviews, we often hear about, your perspective as a coach and a sporting director, but not a lot of people know kind of the background of where you came from, who you were as a soccer player. So I'm curious, growing up in northern New Jersey, how you first got started in soccer, if it was a sport that your family had played for generations before you, and how you were introduced to the sport.
So, I was lucky enough to grow up in a good time for northern New Jersey soccer. We had a lot of senior national team players come through that time period. A big immigrant population. The New York Cosmos were in town playing games, and they had a great team with, Beckenbauer, Pelé, Giorgio Canaglia, Escuderian, just a lot of good international soccer players. So, the team I played on from a young age was a select team, which, comprised of many players that, they're first generation in America. And we got exposed to a high level of soccer at a very young age. My club team, when I was 12, went to Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay to play games. At 13, we went to Peru. At 14, 15, I was starting to make some of the state teams and travel to England. So it was just overall very good soccer experience at a young age that I think helped my development.
Hey, Greg, Kyle here. How good was your was your high school team having two U.S. national team players on it? And did you guys ever lose?
We lost two games as a sophomore. Junior and senior year, we didn't lose. And, we were national champions both years, state champions both years. I think, we scored something like 105 goals and let up two goals all season. That's one year. So we're pretty good. Not bad.
And I mean, you know, when you were there, and I, you know, imagine what year did you graduate from high school?
91.
So at that time, did they have things like Mercy rules or you know, running clock? I mean, obviously it's a running clock, but you know, was there anything in place to, you know, manage a score like that? Because I imagine you had a few lopsided games in there.
Well, you know, Andrew, what we did was we the coach built a schedule around trying to play the top teams in the country. So we would travel. You know, we went to North Carolina, New Mexico, New York. We'd travel all over playing games because he had that much belief in our team. So we didn't really have a lot of weak games. I mean, there are a couple, but well, we tried to play the best teams around, especially the best teams in the state and then in the local area.
Gotcha.
And then as you moved forward, I don't know if a lot of people know, but you went to UNC and you played 3 years there. But at the time when you left after your junior year, not a lot of soccer players were for say leaving early. Can you kind of talk about that and kind of at that time? I mean, I believe there was a couple other players, but it was kind of unheard of. You know, back in the 94 for U.S. Soccer or collegiate players to leave early to go overseas.
Right. You know, that year, myself and Claudio Reyna, my high school teammate, both left after our junior years to go to Europe. But what I'd say is, I guess when I got to college, I wasn't, you know, despite playing on a pretty good high school team, I wasn't, you know, recruited by all the top schools. And when I went to North Carolina, it was basically me telling the coach, listen, I want to come here, I want to play for you, and I know I can make a difference. And he took a chance on me. And, you know, for my first year, I started every game and went on to have a pretty good college career. But it was that period where I started growing and getting more confident. I got selected for the U-20 World Cup. I ended up being captain of that team and playing in the Under-20 World Cup. And then I got really confident, and my game was getting better and better. And I felt at that point after my junior year that I just wasn't improving being in college soccer anymore. And, you know, for some reason I had this drive from when I was a young player to want to be a professional soccer player. I think a lot of the travels I had helped with that, but I wasn't second-guessing it at all. That's what I wanted to do. And then, fortunately enough, I was on a trip with the Olympic team, and we were in Holland playing games, and I was playing well, and scouts saw me, and they got in touch and wanted to offer me a contract. And it was something where my college team ended up going to Germany on a trip, and I was in Germany, and I got a call from an agent at the sports school we were staying at, or a club, and they said, hey, this club wants to sign you. And I went there to the town to look at the team, they had a game that night, and I came back and talked to Elmar Bolowicz, the coach at the time. And, you know, to his credit, I think this is something I remember, you know, vividly. You know, this was a guy who was losing, you know, his captain and one of his better players, and he, without hesitation, he told me, Greg, it's time for you to go. And it meant a lot to me. It still does mean a lot to me, because that push, if he would have said, I need you to stay, maybe I would have second-guessed him, because, you know, it's a big step leaving to go to Europe at that age. But I was ready, and he urged me to go, and it was something that worked out.
And just the transition of that, I mean, you're leaving home, you're away from family. You and I talked about doing correspondence courses, and this is before the internet and email is a major thing. How difficult was that transition initially, not only from a social aspect, but also as a soccer player?
You know, from a soccer player standpoint, it wasn't difficult at all, because I felt like I was at soccer camp. All I did was play soccer. I mean, even on my off days, all I did was train. And it was like a dream for me, and I really loved it. I think from a social standpoint, it was a little more challenging, because you go from an easy college life to, you know, to spending a lot of time alone you know, in a foreign country, learning a new culture. But I think, you know, the Dutch people are very accommodating. They all speak English, and it was something where I just enjoyed it. I was playing every week, and that was the most important thing. I felt like I was getting much better. You know, within 2 months, I had my first full national team cap, and it was, you know, everything was going in the right direction.
Can we continue on that, talking about your first 6 years playing over in Netherlands, yeah. Kind of like how that all, you know, transpired and how you kind of moved, I think it was, what, three teams in 6 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you just talk a little bit about that and what kind of made you kind of stay there for a little bit? You know, I think 6 years is a pretty long stay for most players, especially overseas.
Well, I was enjoying it. You know, I really was. I think that at the time, you know, me and Andrew have talked about this before. You know, Dutch soccer was at its peak. You know, Ajax was winning the Champions League and the Champions League final. PSV had really good teams, Feyenoord, Vitesse. You know, it was a really exciting time for Dutch soccer. And I was learning so much, learning about the game, you know, learning about the Dutch style of soccer. And it was a great time for me, I think. You know, unfortunately, you know, in the mid of my second year, I got injured, and I was basically injured for the next 2 years, and that was tough. That was really difficult. I broke my foot 3 times in that time period, and it was a lot of setbacks. I missed the Olympics. I missed the 98 World Cup, largely due to injury, and it was frustrating. But you know, I think it all changed when, you know, Cambuur, a small team in the north that got promoted to the first division, you know, wanted to sign me from Sparta, which was also in the first division. And, you know, it was a time coming off of a lot of injuries and not much playing time in that second year at Sparta, where I went to Team Cambuur and was totally transformed. You know, it was a great atmosphere, great coach, great team, and, you know, we had some good times.
And I mean, just in that span, you mentioned being injured. While you try to grapple with that, is that a point where you start to understand or maybe take appreciation for the tactics or the coaching aspect of it? Or I guess, how did you mentally start to make that transition from being a soccer player to also being a tactician as well?
No, I think that happened early on. I mean, like, I remember even my first year in Zwolle when I was a pro, writing down all the training sessions, writing down my formations that I like, how I'd want to see the game played. So that was always part of it. But the injury, what it did was it made me understand what it means to be a pro and the rehab and the lifestyle. And I totally transformed myself during that period. And that's what I needed, I think, just to get really serious about what your body means to be able to compete at such a high level. Like, everything you do is based on how your body is functioning. And I think that those 2 years was an eye-opener to that. And after that, it was I never looked back from a fitness standpoint and from an injury standpoint.
During that span, did you ever worry about, you know, your career potentially being in jeopardy, or how do you stay mentally strong in a situation like that?
Yeah, no, I was. I mean, I was wondering if I was going to play. You know, keep playing. Keep. You know, I kept breaking down. I remember guys would joke with me. You know, national team teammates would say, "Oh yeah, you know, if you're ever healthy, if you're ever able to play." And I never looked at myself as that type of player, an injury prone person. But that's what it was. It was one injury after another, and fortunately, when I went to Cambuur, I started playing, and then playing every game for 2 years. Like, I built that base, and my body strengthened, and I got used to playing week in and week out. And like I said, it was at that point where I felt very strong and able to continue.
After your time in Netherlands, you had a 1 year stop in England, and then you moved over to Germany, I think, for your last 8 years. And it seems like I've been reading up on you, and you basically were captains at both those places in Germany. And can you kind of like talk about how you know, that I think that's a pretty huge deal to be, you know, a U.S. player, you know, in Germany. You know, they think they're the kings of soccer, and then you're the captain of the team. So can you kind of talk about how that all kind of transpired and how you kind of, you know, moved your way into being a captain on two teams in Germany?
Yeah, so, you know, I had a time period of a year and a half in England where, you know, I learned more about 4-4-2. I learned more about back four defending and, you know, very physical league. The championship, it was first division at the time, or championship at the time, but very physical league. And I liked it. I always wanted to play in England, so it was a dream come true. But I felt like there was more to it, you know, especially after being a very tactical league like Holland and a very tactics. It was very basic in England, so I wanted a different adventure. And I was able to go to Germany, and, you know, I went to Energie Cottbus, which was in the first Bundesliga at the time, and it was a very, it was a club in Eastern Germany. And it was one, I think, the first club to field a team of all 11 foreigners in the Bundesliga. So it was made up basically of people who wanted opportunity. And a lot of Eastern European players, a lot of foreign players. And it was, you know, it was a very interesting change for me, coming from London to East Germany. And what I learned very quickly about Germans is you have to assert yourself, and you have to fight for everything you want, because if you don't, you're going to get rolled over. And I, from early on, I learned that, and I just was fighting really hard to get in the team, to stay in the team, to make a difference. And I think it was that attitude that they appreciated. And, you know, I became captain of the team. And after getting relegated in the first year, you know, we played three seasons in the second league, and every year we were playing for promotion or relegation. Every game was going down to something, and finally in my last year we got promoted, which was a great accomplishment for the city.
And Greg, we've kind of talked about this briefly before, but, you know, at a given crew practice, you might have, I'd say, four or five reporters being there, might be a large crowd. But can you give us a sense of, you know, in terms of media coverage in Germany, just what that's like as a player, and seeing what your coach has dealt with, maybe that Americans don't understand?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of pressure. You know, there's a lot of newspapers, there's a lot of coverage, there's a lot of sensationalism. You know, that's how they sell newspapers. So if you can imagine, on every street corner is a newspaper kiosk, and it would say, you know, for headlines, and that's how they're selling papers, based on the headlines of the paper. So it's a lot of sensationalism, and there's a huge appetite for soccer. You know, soccer is the main sport, and you know, a lot of attention around it, and which leads to pressure. You know, it wasn't uncommon for, you know, fans to be at the trainings, and, you know, protests, and, you know, every type of thing happening you can mention, you can think about. But I think overall what stands out is just the stadiums are fantastic, great attendance in the stands, and everything was I really enjoyed playing in Germany.
You know, and we've kind of talked also about, you know, your transition to LA Galaxy and that last year being a player assistant coach. I was wondering, just with the dynamic of that, how easy or difficult that was to manage, and what it was like working your way through that role.
So I think you had to build up trust to be able to make that work. And I think over the first 2 years, you know, that trust was built, both from the coaching staff and from the players. You know, we had a very good, very mature group. We had a very good group. And when Bruce presented it, I thought he was crazy. And then as it started going, it just, everything fit really nicely. Like, it was never, there was not one conflict of interest where the players questioned me or the coaching staff questioned that, you know, I was given information. It was not once did that happen. And everything, I mean, the group was amazing to work with, receptive. I think I learned very quickly when to speak and when not to speak, and all that stuff worked really well. And it ended up, you know, we had a good team. We won the Supporters Shield and won the MLS Cup that year. And overall, just a really, really good team.
We also took a couple questions on Twitter, just about, you know, from fans, and a few people wondered about the difficulties and challenges in coaching three in the back versus a 4-2-3-1. How easy or difficult of a challenge was that, presenting that to guys, getting it to stick, and helping them understand some of the nuances of that?
I think it's difficult. critical. I think, you know, I think everyone wants to romanticize about, 2015, about our, about how attacking we were and how many goals we were scoring. And, right. And I think people forget also how many goals we let up. And so for, you know, it's difficult to let go, but what I tried to explain is that, you know, it's not much different from what we've been doing. The base of the system is very similar. It may just give us a little bit more protection in transition moments. I still think it gives us the ability to express ourselves offensively. I think if we're moving and opening up, we can still keep the ball in a similar fashion. But I think, like anything, change is uncomfortable, and that's normal, I think. And just communicating and working through it, and then getting results helps, you know. And I think that in most of the games we played in the system, we've been in the game and, have won some games.
Another Twitter question that that somebody asked is, so far, what are your thoughts on VAR?
I love it. I think it's great. There's going to be the odd thing that people have a hard time understanding, perhaps like the Kaká red card, just understanding how that came to be and how that came to pass with VAR in place. But I think it says a lot about the league. I think it's a great initiative, and I think it's going to get, you know, the obvious things it's going to get right, and that's important. So the obvious mistakes are going to be corrected.
And then the last Twitter question that we had for you, what are some of the benefits of a player-first culture that you've kind of established with the crew so far?
Well, we want the players to be driving this thing. We want them to take ownership in what's happening. Everything we do as coaches is just to put them in position to be able to perform. And I think that's the way we want to look at it. We want to look at it as we're there to prepare the players and to serve the players. I think, you know, at the end of the day, the fans are there to see the players, and we want to put them in. We want to prepare them to be able to perform the right way. But I think, something that can help is, the word of mouth spreads. And when you get players that are comfortable playing here and want to play here, I think it goes a long way in trying to recruit new players as well.
Another one we had was, it seems like the roster management rules, the TAM and GAM rules, the pools and everything like that changes pretty much on a yearly basis. For you as a coach and sporting director, what are some of the difficulties in adapting that and also putting it into practice when the rules seemingly change just about every year, or are, you know, there are at least minor changes every year?
You have to be flexible. I think that's the key. There's no sense in me presenting a 3-year roster model plan to ownership, because I know that can change next week with a new TAM allocation amount given out. So you have to be flexible. I think you have ideas, you have plans, but you have to be able to alter those and change and adjust and get information in to be able to plan for something new. So I think I see it as a benefit to this league. I think that the league is very, very agile. You know, if things don't make sense, it can be changed. And I think that's an important factor in this league.
One more thing that I'd like to ask you about. A lot of MLS fans in general are big U.S. national, fans, and also, you are a player on them. Can you talk a little bit about Bruce and what he's kind of brought back to the team, or kind of his style that, I think things were kind of rocky when he kind of took over, and he's kind of steadied the ship a little bit, and just kind of like your interactions kind of like with Bruce, and kind of like how you feel like Team USA is kind of going at the moment.
Well, I think one of Bruce's greatest attributes is he makes you absolutely proud to play for the U.S. national team and proud to represent your country. And when you play with that sense of pride, you know, you're fighting harder and you're working harder to get a result. And I think, that's a real strength of his. I remember playing for the national team and lining up against some of these countries, and you feel like you have the whole country behind you. And he gives you that great sense of pride. I think he's a very player's first manager in terms of, you know, he puts the guys in comfortable positions. He's very demanding of performance, but outside of the game, he's relaxed and he treats you like adults and gives you responsibility. So I think all those things is what you want from the national team. I mean, you're working every day with your club team. You're under a ton of pressure with your club team. And when you go to the national team, you want that freedom. You want that, the backing that you're representing your country and the responsibility to perform is there.
All right, we'll wrap up with you with a few rapid fire questions. The first one is favorite soccer stadium you've played in, and your favorite non soccer stadium as well.
Favorite soccer stadium was our home stadium for 1860 Allianz Arena. It's an amazing stadium. Good capacity, great design. It's a great stadium. So that would be my favorite soccer stadium I played. Favorite non soccer stadium?
Yeah.
Explain that one that I've been
football,
to.
Yeah, that any place you've been to. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Let me see. It's funny. All I think about is soccer stadiums now. Hold on. I'll get one. So it has to be in America, right? Because I probably haven't been in another soccer stadium. I mean, another non-soccer stadium outside of America. I'm gonna say New Giant Stadium.
Okay.
Who is your favorite teammate?
Who was my favorite teammate ever?
Yeah.
Frankie Hittok.
Okay. Favorite movie.
Favorite movie? Yeah. Oh man, that's a tough one.
You can give us a few too.
Goodfellas.
Okay.
All right. Favorite book.
Let me see. That's a tough one, also. As the Crow Flies.
Okay. Sport you're best at other than soccer.
Swimming.
Okay.
What was the best goal you've ever scored?
The best goal I've ever scored. I think in college I had a pretty nice free kick against Garth Lagerwey. That was directly in upper 90 in the NCAA tournament.
Is that on YouTube?
I don't know. I don't know if you know if they videotaped back then.
We'll have to look for it. Favorite place to eat in Columbus?
I like the Pearl or Guildhouse.
Okay.
Favorite city outside the U.S.?
Favorite city outside the U.S.? Oh, man, there's a lot. Barcelona.
And your favorite soccer moment?
Favorite soccer moment? That's tough. I have a couple. But I think a great moment was when we qualified for the World Cup in Columbus in the beating Mexico 2-0. That was fun.
Okay. Last one for you. Current non-soccer athlete who you feel would make the best soccer player in his or her position?
Let me think about that. I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, what I'd say is when you look at these American sports in particular, when you see the athleticism involved in some of the positions, you know, it would be, you know, amazing to think if you had that type of athlete playing soccer. But, you know, there's also so much other that goes into the development of them to get their skill set up to speed, the tactical development, the technical development. So it's always challenging to kind of put, you know, say a guy like LeBron would be an amazing soccer player. Right. You know, for me, that's such a stretch, even though they're phenomenal athletes.
I think he'd be one hell of a goalie.
Yeah. Maybe with the vertical lead.
Yeah.
all right, Greg. Well, hey, we appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that was Greg Berhalter, coach and sporting director of Columbus Crew SC. Kyle, your thoughts?
I think we kind of stumped on some of those questions there at the end.
That's tough. And to be fair, you know, to walk right into that, I mean, that's tough. And that's different from what we usually ask on a daily basis. So that was kind of interesting. But I think that'll do it for us on the Soccer Speak Easy podcast. We'd like to thank Patrick Flaherty, the podfather, of course. You know, he mentioned Goodfellas, didn't mention The Godfather, so I don't know on that. But for Andrew Erickson, Kyle Robertson, thanks so much, and we'll catch you next time.